As the scrum over climate policy on Capitol Hill took form that summer, ExxonMobil lobbyists made two principal arguments to fence sitting congresspeople and senators. Even if cap and trade were phased in so that its costs did not hit the United States until the economy recovered fully from recession, they said, the system would nonetheless destroy jobs and growth. A Brookings Institution study showed, in fact, that the Obama and Waxman proposal might take about 2.5% out of American gross domestic product during the next 40 years, the equivalent of 1 year's economic growth, as the cost for removing between 110 and 140 billion metric tons of CO2 from the atmosphere. That was not a daunting cost-benefit trade-off if climate change was accepted as a grave national danger. But among congresspeople whose constituents in 2009 suffered from personal bankruptcies, mortgage defaults, and even homelessness, it was not an easy trade-off to accept. The same Brookings study showed that cap-and-trade would destroy about 15% of jobs in the oil and coal industries by 2025, although it would have virtually no effect on employment outside of the energy sector. ExxonMobil emphasized those forecasted job losses to members of the Senate from the oil and coal states that would be hardest hit. The corporation's representatives also pointed out that the public did not understand cap-and-trade very well. Among those who had heard of the policy proposal at all, more than twice as many of those surveyed had negative as positive assessments. During 2009, ExxonMobil lobbyists left behind in congressional offices PowerPoint slides documenting a private Hart Research Associates poll, Energy and Climate Change Policy, that had been commissioned by the U.S. Climate Task Force, the Pro-Carbon Tax Coalition. The poll showed that Americans preferred a carbon tax to cap-and-trade, and they strongly favored a tax when educated about the arguments in favor of each approach. On the morning of September 23, 2009, Rex Tillerson arrived at the Sheraton on 7th Avenue to participate in the Investing in Girls and Women plenary session at the Clinton Global Initiative. Delegates in the Sheraton ballroom sat with name tags dangling from their necks. The decor was tinted blue, purple, and red. Two large screens on the sides of a stage flashed photographs of dignified third-world poor. Bill Clinton took the stage wearing a brown suit. It was an early hour, and his baggy eyes and raspy voice hinted at a late night.
"It was very important to me that this issue of women and girls be highlighted at this year's initiative," he told the audience.
He invited a number of commitment makers to the stage to congratulate them on their philanthropy before the audience. Muhammad Yunus, the Nobel laureate and founder of Grameen Bank, was among the honored. So was Lori Jackson of ExxonMobil. Clinton introduced Diane Sawyer. She summoned to the stage members of a panel to talk about women's issue. The panel included Tillerson and Lloyd Blankfein, the chief executive of Goldman Sachs, the investment bank with a public reputation as much in need of repair as ExxonMobil's. The ballroom atmosphere suggested the laying on of liberal, globalized hands to cleanse sinful multinational corporations. "These are some of the power hitters," Sawyer said of Tillerson and Blankfein. Tillerson talked about ExxonMobil's charitable initiatives to support girls and women in some of the poor countries where the corporation extracted oil.
"Technology comes very natural to ExxonMobil," he said. "What are the technologies that will provide them, girls and women, capabilities to undertake their daily activities in a more effective and efficient way?"
Sawyer later asked him, "What is the responsibility of a multinational corporation to make the world better through charitable activity? Is it a tithe of 10%? How much?"
"Ultimately," Tillerson said, "this is our shareholders' money we're spending. It's not my money to tithe. It's not the corporation's. It's our shareholders'."
By late 2009, whatever anxieties Tillerson and Cohen might have possessed as the Obama administration took office, it had become apparent that ExxonMobil would prevail again on the public policy issues that mattered most to the corporation. Cap-and-trade legislation died a slow death in the U.S. Senate. Its proponents could not construct a filibuster-proof majority. In Copenhagen, in December,
Representatives of the world's major economies failed to agree on post-Kyoto rules that would deliver serious reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. ExxonMobil sent its astrophysicist and climate policy advocate, Brian Flannery, to attend the Copenhagen negotiations. Flannery sought to educate media and delegates about the issues as the corporation saw them. In Irving, ExxonMobil's corporate forecasters monitored the Copenhagen talks, but they had by now concluded that even if some sort of international protocol on climate were reached, it would not actually affect emissions very much. The implementation becomes extremely complicated, extremely political, and it's hard to see that expanding on a really, really wide scale, one of the executives involved said. Transformations as China industrialized further would do much more to determine the world's climate future than negotiations such as those at Copenhagen, ExxonMobil's analysts concluded. Tillerson and his colleagues shifted their image advertising and lobbying messages to emphasize jobs, which their internal polling showed resonated strongly. Tillerson returned to Washington in October to speak at the Economic Club at the luxury Ritz-Carlton Hotel. On ExxonMobil's carbon tax proposal, which Tillerson had unveiled in Washington almost a year earlier, the chairman said, "I hope you see it shows how serious we are about this issue. We're engaged heavily. We need to get this as right as we can."